Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Aaron O'Brien.
Holly Bichelle.
Natalie Schlickman.
Yes!
I'm sorry!
We're all here.
Well, I tried to sound as open-ended as possible.
Yes. The gaps will be edited
Welcome,
out in
Natalie.
Post.
Hello! Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on the show. It's been a while since we've had you on. Last time, listeners, you may remember, Natalie Schlickman had a taste for Armageddon.
That's right. We talked about the original series, Taste of our Armageddon. About probably a year or more ago.
It's been more than a year. Yeah.
It was more than a year because I have a 1-year-old child now. So.
Yes.
And that's the night you found out you were expecting because you couldn't drink with us.
Yeah. Or it was pretty early on.
Wow.
It was at least pretty early on in the pregnancy, yeah.
Well, I'm glad you found out before you did the podcast.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
We tried to have a yawn for the first discovery run, but I think just the baby was just making things complicated.
Yeah, it didn't quite work out that time. I was,
Babies will do that.
Babies will do that.
Babies day out. Babies podcast out.
Name the babies.
Right. Well, we are back in season 2, Dave, and we did get a little trickle of news. We got a little news about Paramount chasing after Quentin Tarantino with a sharp knife.
Please shiv me. Give me some shivvy Star Trek since we can't get Chris Pine or Chris Hemsworth back. So it's kind of funny that the Quentin Tarantino rumors thing was happening for that while. So it's like they almost knew that the Star Trek 4 was going to crash and burn, and so they needed a backup. It's what it sort of seems
really,
like in hindsight.
Yeah, really bizarre. So I mean, it's like one of those things that you just like Star Trek 4, as we've said before, has been shelved for now because of supposedly money issues between Hemsworth and Chris Pine and. Paramount doesn't want to give him that much money. So it all comes down to now that Quentin Tarantino pitched an idea for a new Star Trek film. Paramount really liked the idea. And I guess they're going to try to go forward with it.
That's
Tarantino's
exciting.
Working. Well, it's exciting, but it's also kind of nerve-wracking because a lot of people aren't really crazy about Tarantino doing a Star Trek film.
I'm so excited
Why?
For rated R Star Trek. That would be so great.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm really open to the idea personally, but I like the majority of Tarantino's work. So,
right.
Yeah,
I do too. But it's like one of those things. Like, do these two great tastes go together? You know,
we won't know until we find out.
As long as it's got like Klingons and Batleths and excuses for lots of violence to happen, and maybe some Ferengi so you can throw in some nudity. I mean, or some Beta Zeds. They like to get married naked. So I mean, like, there's so many possibilities. You can make a Star Trek rated R very easily and keep it still in canon without going crazy.
So it sounds like David wants a show that doesn't have anything to do with actual Starfleet. He just wants to see all the aliens.
I know. My thing is more of like his directing style is very different than what we start seeing on Star Trek.
Yeah.
I mean, if we get, is he going to play like one of these like offbeat songs that become popular again, like Stuck in the Middle with You, like a Reservoir Dogs or something like that? You know, I mean, you got to wonder.
Well, I mean,
as long as it's not Sabotage again.
Oh, thank you, Natalie. Jesus, that song's got to be put to bed.
It's great because I mean the new movies have the precedent for Sabotage. So if Quentin Tarantino gives us something not Sabotage, that would be great. So I mean, it's not gonna be that far off. And then making the Beastie Boys actually Star Trek canon doesn't make much sense. I don't know. Maybe something older would make sense, but Beastie Boys doesn't make a lot of sense. Yeah, they are, but the 90s was also a terrible time for humanity.
Well, there's a little clue on this in this episode that I want to get into later on, but
yeah.
Something changes a little bit, I think, on the timeline, but we'll get into that later. But anyways, so Tarantino movie, I guess Tarantino is doing a movie currently or just ready to release a movie, and possibly, if everything goes right, we'll be getting a Tarantino Trek in 2021.
Woo!
So that's the earliest, if everything goes, you know, right into, you know...
According to plan.
Yeah, according to plan. Exactly. So, hey, that's cool stuff.
Yeah.
Cool stuff. I mean, it is exciting. Don't get me wrong. But it is also kind of like, eh, is this going to work, you know?
Sorry.
Who wants to go?
I could see it going either really well or just really god awful. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think there's going to be much of a middle ground.
Right. Well, I can kind of understand why, Aaron, you would be kind of apprehensive, because your like whole favorite thing about Star Trek is the campy, silly mixed with the sci-fi, and I don't know that really any of Quentin Tarantino's films are silly.
They're pretty campy, though. I mean, the violence in Kill Bill is
I guess that's true.
Well, but the thing
it's like rated R.
But they're
campy.
Darker.
But the thing is, Kill Bill. Yeah. Like, I don't know if any of you guys are fans of Japanese anime, but especially the super violent ones like Ninja Scroll and Vampire Hunter D, stuff like that.
I love Ninja Scroll and Vampire Hunter D.
Well, I those are some of my favorite animes, personally. But the thing is, the way I looked at Kill Bill was Quentin Tarantino was trying to make a live-action anime, which is why the violence was that way, because it's very, like shot for shot sometimes. Like, the violence is like Ninja Scroll, where you get the fountain of blood from a decapitation or whatever. Like, it's just so over the top. It's like anime. That's the way I thought.
Dave, did you ever see Kung Fu Hustle?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's sort of reminded me, too, of that kind of thing. It's just over the top. It's not as violent.
But. Yeah, but, like, trying to do a live-action anime. So that was my take on Kill Bill, personally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All three?
There's only two.
Oh, is there two? I thought there was a third one.
Well, they're talking about making a third one where the little girl comes back and the daughter of the woman she kills in the first movie comes back and kills the bride, but that's never happened yet, so.
Yeah, they've been talking about that for many, many years.
Right. Well,
we're not a Kill Bill podcast.
not really.
Not yet.
Yeah, so soon to be. Well, anyway, so yeah, that's the current news. We don't really know much, but it's kind of weird that this they're kind of stretching to, but you know, we'll see where it takes us. Star Trek is going into some strange unknown territory. That's for sure. But we should get into our meat of this episode. We're doing the newest episode of Star Trek Discovery.
New Eden.
Yes.
New Eden. Like New Mexico or New York.
Yuck.
New Amsterdam.
New Orleans.
That was before New York.
Before New York.
Just New York.
It was New Amsterdam.
Before there was New York, there was York.
Just York.
Before there was New Orleans, there was Orleans.
That's right. New Orleans. All right. So, yeah, so this is Star Trek Discovery Season 2, Episode 2, Episode New Eden, directed by Jonathan Franks, the great William Riker.
Woo! And, Jonathan Franks!
And it debuted on January 24th, 2019. So we get the opening of the show. We have Michael Burnham showing Captain Pike's Spock speak and spell log entry, and
I love how I love how they already changed how the speak and spell works. She didn't have to throw up 100 things into the sky to make it work. She only made it throw up one. This
it was
episode.
A different. It was a different drawing.
That was it was just an annoying thing that he was throwing up.
It was a completely different thing, David.
It was a speak and spell. Every time we saw the speak and spell used in the first episode. they threw up a whole bunch of things. This time she only threw it up once. So they changed the way she could spell it.
It was a compilation of all of his nightmares. All of his nightmares put together made the whole image. That's why. But this was a completely different little sketch.
So you're saying she sketched this on the speak and spell.
Throw up. She did not want to throw up in Captain Pike's office. So. Anyway, so the drawing is an exact match to Discovery Center's logs that are tracking these light red signals thingies. That they've been seeing. The red thing.
Where's my red thing?
So,
but Spock drew this 2 months ago.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Which is going to my further thought that he sabotaged Enterprise.
Right.
That's my thought. So
no more Pung Far mystery in this one, though.
Well, you know, but anyway, so we get Spock is also in a mental health facility, so he's off to the Federation Funny Farm.
Yes, so. I bet McCoy is just like just rubbing his hands together. It's like, oh yeah, Spock's in the Funny Farm.
Yeah,
he's probably mad though because he wasn't the one to check him in.
Oh man, I just hope McCoy finds out about it.
I bet those files will be sealed.
I was gonna say, I think it'll be a well kept secret.
They'll be expunged like Michael Burnham's record.
Exactly. But when Michael's talking to Captain Pike, she's about to tell him about the Red Angel that she saw when she was injured on the asteroid.
Right.
But she kind of stops just before.
Yep.
And she's hesitant, so maybe she doesn't know if she can trust Captain Pike, or maybe she feels like maybe she just saw something really weird when she was injured. So, but from there,
I think it comes back to shame.
Shame?
Yeah, I just feel like, you know, she grew up with this Spock, and like she would know of his nightmares, and she's seeing this thing, and it's got to correlate with what's going on. She's gotta notice some things. And she's probably ashamed of what she did, and I don't know. It's just weird.
Oh, so you're still banking on that there was something between her and Spock? Yeah.
She did a sexy fan dance before Uhura did.
Uh-huh. Okay, gotcha.
she cock-teased that little Vulcan.
Just give me Cybok. That's all I want.
I want Cybok so bad.
I do,
too. Part of Star Trek V.
I like how next week's episode, like, they see the ship and they're like, oh, it's Sarek's ship. It'd be great if, like, Cybok had just hijacked it. It's like, yeah, I need to smoke some doobies away from the house.
Exactly. So they find out that there's the other signal that they could go after. Another red signal has been detected, but it's too far away. It's 150 years away on the other side of the Beta Quadrant. Tilly's got this idea how to find it, and they kind of zone in on how to track it down. But when they start talking about how they could get there quickly, obviously they decide the best way is just use the spore drive.
Yep. And I pretty much called it. Whenever in the preview, the original preview, when they said they were like 30,000 light years apart, I'm like, there's no way they can investigate these without using the spore drive. So I'm glad I was right about that. Woo.
Well, that's what Discovery's, you know, for the, on this mission, obviously the ship's equipped for it. And here comes your favorite line, Natalie.
Yeah.
Take it away.
If you're telling me that the ship can skip across the universe on a highway made of mushrooms, I kind of have to go on faith.
Yeah.
It was so good.
Pike is great.
He does have the best lines, doesn't he?
He does.
He has some great lines so far.
Although I don't understand why he was experiencing post-orgasm relief after the spore jump, because no one else ever did that.
Maybe he was just really, really into it.
Maybe, but I mean, then you get Saru's like, oh, you never forget your first. And I'm like, what do you know about sex, Saru? You're the only person of your race here.
It's possible that his social awkwardness never got the reference that was actually for sex, and he just used it inappropriately.
That's true.
That's possible.
I mean, like, he made a really bad sex joke. It wasn't even good. I was like, really? Come on, Saru.
Maybe that was just his way of trying to relate to the humans on board. You know, right. he doesn't quite get the humor, just like Data.
Maybe, right. but also no one laughed or like looked at him. They just kind of took it as like a matter of fact. And I'm like, what do you mean? No one ever notices the first. The only thing Michael noticed was like some water droplets. And they've never ever shown that again for Black Alert. So I'm like,
That wasn't water, Dave.
Oh, it was jizz. God, yeah.
All right.
Oh, no.
So
who was jizzing on Tilly's room?
Oh. So Tilly gets some action. Just before they make the jump, Stamet is talking to Tilly about why he's kind of hesitant to get back into the saddle. Tilly's all excited to do another jump, and he basically says that he sees Dr. Culber. He's seen Dr. Culber in the mycelium network before, and that he was the one that helped him navigate out when they were in the mirror universe. So that was a thing. And then right after the jump's complete, Stamet stomps away. So he's obviously, this is taking a toll on him, not just physically, but emotionally as well.
The way they shot that entire scene, it just felt like, they made it feel wrong, like the entire experience of the spore drive. Where it's just like, oh, we're just going to jump in the thing. And, you know, he's acting silly after the spore jumps because he's high on mushrooms. And they just played it like the way they shot it, the way they shot the things going through his arms. And they just seemed a lot more like dramatic and maybe almost overly so. For his response, and again, I understand he's like sort of sad about seeing Hugh, but I'm like, I'm with Tilly. Like, if I lost someone I loved, I'm like, I jump with the chance to see them again.
But is he sad because he saw him or because he did not see him?
Did not see him.
Uh-huh.
We don't know if he saw him or not.
And
secondly, maybe he, you know, maybe they had an argument.
He's upset because he'd rather be dead with him than alive without him, and I think it's hard for him to go over and have to come back.
I think it's just imagine if you lost someone you love and then you're seeing them, you have the chance of seeing them, it's like a ghost, and then you can't just put that person, you know, to say yes. Yeah, behind you, or try to at least, and they keep on coming up.
I wonder if he experiences time differently. But also his research and
yeah, maybe. True. It's true.
Like maybe he's there
but also
for like
he
a week.
Like sorry with his like profession, he experiences it in a different perspective.
Yeah.
So you really, it's at this point, I think it's just kind of a guessing game what's going on in his head, because it could be that he's happy. It could be that he's sad. You don't know yet. I don't know.
I'll be in my bunk, Tilly. I just need you to leave me alone. I got to get to my bunk.
Right. So after the jump is there, the red signal's gone, of course.
Where's my red thing?
Conveniently.
But there is a planet with a peaceful colony. And there's a distress signal that's been transmitting on a loop for 200 years, which is before the invention of warp drive. And
humans.
And they are humans, and on the far side of the beta quadrant. So this is kind of strange. So they would have to arrive during what they, in Star Trek timeline, would be World War III. And there seems to be 11,000 people, and they have no electricity.
World War III lasted between 2026 and 2060. I'm sorry, 2053.
Right, exactly. So they're kind of like baffled by why that's happening. But so they have to discuss what they're going to try to go down the surface and find out how these people got there. So at the shuttle bay where we're keeping that giant asteroid, Tilly's there, and Tilly's going to grab one of these rocks or a sample from that. And when she does, unfortunately, these rocks have a huge gravity with them, and it lets out some kind of discharge and knocks her unconscious.
Almost kills her, according to the doctor.
Yes.
It did not look good.
Captain Pike is going down with Michael Burnham, and he's also going down with the navigator, Awushigu. So, anyway. I wish a gown. So they go down, and it's basically there's an old church that's there, and I guess they said that the glass in the church is 200 years old. So this is definitely a 200-year-old settlement at that time. And from there, they reading the Bible on the altar, and it's a cobbled together with different religious messages in their scripture. So everything is quite changed quite a bit.
Also, it's like newspaper clippings of like people getting murdered or whatever. Just like, oh yeah, it's part of the Bible.
20% off Sears appliances. So,
and then the bra section.
Yes, that's right. The bra section. Brassiers.
This is the holiest of the scriptures.
So Michael notices on the window that there's a red angel depicted on the wall. And right when they see that, a man walks in and asks them why they're working out in the fields. And they said, well, we're not from here. We're from a different part of the planet.
We're from the north.
He says, well, you have to see the All-Mother. So the All-Mother is sort of like the priestess of the neighborhood or town village. And she kind of gives like a whole history of World War III and how the bombs were dropping and the angel appeared and took them off into a new planet. And this is the planet New Eden. Mm-hmm. And they
called the planet something else.
Yeah, yeah. It's called a Taurus.
Terracelium. Okay.
That's Terracelium. Right. Yeah, that's right.
New Eden is the specific colony or the group of people,
the town or whatever village you want to call them. But so. So she goes on to say that because we didn't know which faith had saved them, they decided just to put all the faiths together as one. And
they looked at the coexist bumper sticker and they just followed it hard. I'm surprised the coexist bumper sticker isn't on all the pews.
Oh, God. That's a very funny thought.
It's like, yeah, man, that's got to be it.
That's got to be it. The coexist sticker is our God. It should be up there with the red angel on the red angel's forehead.
That would be kind of funny.
maybe it's in the stained glass somehow. You'll have to watch it again.
Oh, that would be hilarious.
But a
closer look.
I think it's mentioned that it's not just that they just compiled all these religions. They compiled all the religions to find out more about the red angel.
Sure.
It wasn't just that they were like, oh, we must all worship everything together. It was an attempt to understand. I think that was went over. I think that was gone over in the episode.
The knowledge.
Yeah. Well,
but they cobbled together all these faiths into basically one faith, mm-hmm. and they don't have any power. So they lost the battery, lost its power, and they've been unable to restore it. Apparently, there's a broken helmet camera from a soldier. And they said they were unable to restore it. And this happened in 2053. Mm-hmm. That was the year they said it was supposed to take place. Anyways,
the last year of the war.
Which is 200 years ago.
Yes, just mm-hmm. about there, yes. Next scene, we get Tilly wakes up in the sick bay where Saru is yelling at her that she could have been killed. And trying to do that. And Tilly says that she thought she could help Commander Stamets in the chamber jumps. By using this dark matter that from the baryonic asteroid that they have. So Saru explains to Tilly that she needs to learn to ask for help and that she needs to be more careful. And he makes a long discussion how he was the only Kelpian in command. And he basically said, I took all that on my slender shoulders. I took all that
weight. Don't do the same.
Yeah, don't do the same thing. So. Just because she's one of the youngest people in the command
program.
Training program.
Right.
Yeah, I think he says that she's the youngest ever accepted in the episode.
Sure. So, and then Saru is called to the bridge, and then we find out there's a gravitational distortion that is, if you have one of the rings of the planet, it's going to have a extinction level event that's going to kill everything on the planet. So Saru decides that we got to save the people on the surface. And because of this distortion or of this radiation, they can't contact the people, Pike and everyone else down on the planet. So
on the planet, they're like, oh, can we go sleep at the church? Yeah, like, yeah, it's fine. And then they get discovered looking for the technology by the original guy who found them.
Yes.
And then he throws a stun grenade at them.
Yes, the man Jacob. He was one of the families that were, I guess, ancestors to scientists. They were trying to find an answer how they got there. And when he thinks that they beam down there. I mean, he surmises correctly that they're from outer space and they came on a ship. And then he decides he's going to get the answers one way or the other, and he throws a stun grenade at them and knocks them out and locks them in the basement and
takes their technology to show to the All-Mother.
And by the use of magnets, they're use a magnet to open a deadbolt.
Magnets. Nobody knows how they work.
It was a slide lock.
Well, still, it's pretty. That's got to be a strong magnet.
Pretty crafty. I mean,
that's some MacGyver shit right there.
Yeah, definitely MacGyver shit.
Maybe she's the MacGyver discovery.
She was necessary to this. I can't remember her name.
It's difficult to say.
Her first name's Joanne.
That's just called Joanne.
It's a Wushagoo or Wushagon.
Wushakon?
Yeah.
Wosekun.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, let's just call her Joanna or Joanne.
Joanna. Anyways, So once Jacob shows the All Mother their technology, Pike and Michael and Oshagon show up right after and say, "Hey, isn't it like against our basic law to steal?"
Hey, what happened to thou shalt not steal?
Yeah.
What I loved is, oh my God, I'm totally blanking on the captain's name.
Pike.
That's so ridiculous that I blanked on that. What I found fascinating through the episode was that he, at two times, he not only, I mean, I don't know, it just seemed like he already knew this, like, religion, and he was able to not sweet talk himself through, but take their word, which he didn't read much of, and apply it to the situation he was in and with the All Mother and address the, I don't know, it just seemed like he may have had previous knowledge.
He said his father taught science, and his father also taught comparative religions. So he probably heard a lot about the religions at home. So he was able to, and I also like how he did like the and the, also with you like a bit of a benediction at a church, which was kind of great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
sure.
I guess I missed that one part.
So the one thing I kind of skipped over when Tilly was in the sick bay, she was she saw a woman talking to her, and
I thought Tilly had a girlfriend for a second.
Yeah,
me too.
I thought Tilly had a little bit of a maybe like stalker
fangirl. Because
her hair looked a lot like hers too when it's pulled back.
So Tilly's in the sick bay and she's talking to herself and she's trying to figure out how to save the people down on the planet. And she's going through all these different ways to do it. And she was saying how she wishes Michael was there to give her, like, you know, different ideas or to keep her going, trying to solve this plan. Mm-hmm. When this crew member, May, walks in and she starts talking to her and trying to help fix the Isaian planet, where they come up the idea of a gravitational mass field that they could use, and they can use the asteroid as a giant magnet using gravity. So Tilly runs out and runs the wrong way for a moment.
And that part was hilarious.
And then she runs up to the bridge, and Saru's like, "What the hell, Tilly?" And she goes into this crazy plan where if they take the asteroid and have it out, hang out the back, and they perform basically like a donut to whirl around and get the rings from the planet to basically get yanked off and to move away from the planet so its trajectory won't kill everybody.
Could I ask a question?
Yes.
Was anybody else dissatisfied with the motion of the ship? Like, it didn't look like the ship was doing a donut at all. It didn't look like it was drifting or anything.
I did want to see more spinning of a ship, like a car doing a donut.
It seemed almost too slow motion.
Yeah, at least some kind
of
rotation. Yeah, well, I was dissatisfied.
Yeah. Well, it is what it is, people.
Sorry.
We blew the budget on the first episode.
They pretty much did. The first episode was impressively
satisfy everything.
So they start putting that together, and Stamets says that he'll make a jump into the field or just in front of the field so they can do that as quickly as possible. Because I guess they have like 2 minutes to do it before everyone dies. On the planet, like I said, they're in front of the old All Mother, and this is when a little girl seems to pick up the phaser and overloads it, and Pike jumps on it and absorbs the blast, and he's basically going to die. So they ask to bring him over to the bring him to the church so they can help him.
Right. They can pray.
Yeah, and once they do that, this is up in space. They basically are successful in pulling away the radioactive ring or rocks or cascade that's going to be coming down, and they get Pike to the church where he gets beamed up. But Jacob walks in the last minute and watch them all get beamed away.
But the All Mother's like,
yeah, the All Mother saw
Red Angel has saved them. Well, it should have been red if it was the Red Angel lady.
It should be.
She's colorblind. Don't be mean to colorblind people.
Colorblind, mixing up red and yellow? I don't think that's how that works.
Hey, maybe they're on a planet where they get different kinds of colorblindness.
Maybe the radiant.
But yeah, maybe, I kind of interpreted it as more like it was the work of the Red Angel and not necessarily the Red Angel itself. So I didn't really mind that wasn't, you know, red.
And what I loved at the beginning is that they talked about they talked about the law of, like, you know, they changed you know, any advanced species is any advanced extraterrestrial species with advanced enough technology is indistinguishable from God. Which I thought was really interesting. So they just couldn't understand the technology. So it's like, oh, it must be divine intervention.
Well, but isn't it funny that Jacob is someone who's leans on science and the All Mother leans on faith. So Jacob believes that they're from space, and she thinks they're from, you know, God or some kind of angelic thing. So
shun the non-believer.
Yeah, exactly. So
burn the witches.
Next. Burn them! I'm not a witch.
You look like one.
They put this false nose on me. So Pike is back on Discovery. He gets healed up, and they have Michael and Pike have this talk about how she did see the angel, and she finally tells him, and she felt that maybe she was hallucinating, but after seeing the church, then she was like, well, maybe there's more to it than this. And then they have this discussion about telling Jacob the truth about General, but Pike say, hey, we got the Prime Directive, General Order 1. And, you know, Michael's like, well, maybe, you know, he knows something more. He does seem to know more, so maybe you should put his mind at ease.
We can do one objective, but we'd have to forego another.
Right, and that was to get the helmet cam and get Jacob to give him the helmet cam. So down on the planet, Jacob's down on the church in the basement, and a Pike's there, and he explains them basically that they are from Earth and they have a ship. And they fly around from star to star, and he just wants the helmet cam, and it gives him a long lasting battery. So
hey, this is the quadruple A.
Yeah. Duracell.
Yeah, nothing else. So, Duracell battery.
That's right. And so just after Pike beams out, all of a sudden the lights go on and the church is brimming with light.
I thought the computer that was displaying the message looked kind of like the computer from the computers from Enterprise with all those buttons up and down the side of it.
Oh, yeah.
That's well, and then next we see it. Pike's working on the broken camera. And when he gets the sound working, we see what happens in the church. So basically, the soldiers are in the church. There's people in the church. And all of a sudden, it looks like there's bombs going to be dropping or some terrible carnage is happening outside. And when they close the church doors, all of a sudden an angel appears, and then the camera goes dead. And that's kind of where we get left from there.
Yeah.
What was the
are we missing the last part with Tilly?
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah, we forgot about that.
The old Tilly thing. So yeah, so she looks up this person. She's like, you know, where is that person familiar? And then he finds
Stilly. She calls her Stilly.
Stilly, yeah. And she's like, aren't you? And then she looks her up and she figures out that she went to school with her.
Yeah.
But then upon looking her up in the database, it turns out that she's deceased.
So she's talking to ghosts.
So it sounds like her storyline might kind of parallel Stamets' storyline, because he's seeing ghosts, now she's seeing ghosts.
Discovery's becoming a ship of the damned where they see ghosts everywhere.
Bark of the dead.
That would be great.
I think it all has to come back to the spore drive and the technology they're using for the spore drive.
Oh, I just remember that little green little spore nug fell on Tilly last season.
That old spore nug.
Yeah, the little spore nug dropped on
it's
her.
It's been so stewing in her.
Yeah.
For a good 2 days.
So, Natalie, you are our guest. We're going to give you the first go-around. What you thought about this season 2, episode 2, New Eden. What did you think of this episode? Any takeaways, thoughts, likes, dislikes?
Well, like, the part of it was a lot like the beginning of the TOS episode, The Paradise Syndrome, I thought, you know, like, oh, they find humans, right. And then, but there's like an asteroid coming, except, you know, we miss the part where Kirk gets knocked out and doesn't remember who he is.
I hated, that's the part I hated with him and the American Indians, and I was so like, oh, can we just find some other way to express this?
Kirk needs to get his horny
like
on.
But kind of like the first part of that, like, before that happens, but I thought this episode was pretty reminiscent of that.
It's very reminiscent, actually, of a lot of old TOS episodes.
Yeah,
it's the most
TOS. They have, like, the human-like civilization that, is pre-warp. Yeah. We can't, you know, tell them who we are, but then they find out anyways.
Yeah.
It's funny the rules he was willing to bend. Like, let's use the spore drive anyway. but no, we can't tell them. No.
I know, it's like the rules are for everyone else but us. Supersedes it all.
That really pisses me off because Saru's part of the crew and he's the only Kelpian. So they're gonna take an indigenous race off its planet who's never ever stepped in foot. But we've got a whole bunch of humans stranded in Hirogen space. They're gonna become hunted in probably the next year or two.
But they're in the Beta Quadrant. They're not in the Delta Quadrant.
No, the Hirogen network spreads all the way through the Beta Quadrant because that's how they were able to send the message to Earth.
We still don't know the lie or whatever the truth, quote-unquote truth, is that allowed Saru to even be among these people. We don't even know where the Federation thinks he came from.
We know Michelle Yeoh broke the Prime Directive and took him off his planet.
Well, we as viewers have seen this. However, it's not been discussed what everyone in the show thinks.
Or knows.
Which is
what I found frustrating last episode. I'm like, how come nobody understands where Saru came from? It's like they talk about Kelpians, like they know all the stuff about Kelpians, but how do they not know they're not warp faring? It doesn't
They can observe societies and planets, but they just can't intervene. There's a difference, I guess.
Yeah, but at the same time, how do they not know they're warp capable, and why is Saru, like, no one's ever questioning why Saru's there?
We don't know because we haven't heard why, like, what they told the public. Like, we don't know how Giorgio, quote-unquote, found him, so...
Well, I just think it's hilarious that they're so far in the Beta Quadrant, because once you get so far into the Beta Quadrant, you're going to be near the Delta Quadrant or nearish the Delta Quadrant. They're way on the other side of the Klingon Empire. So either
what side of the Beta Quadrant they're on, Dave? I mean, it's like
the Beta Quadrant. Earth is on the edge of the Beta Quadrant, on the Alpha Quadrant. Yeah. So the other edge is going to be, so since it's like a pie, it's going to go around the circle if they're far on the edge of the Beta Quadrant.
I'm looking at a map right now of the Beta Quadrant, and Beta Quadrant has the Romulan Empire, the Klingon Empire, the Gorn, the Tholians. There's a lot. So
oh yeah, there's a lot.
So whatever.
Should bring back the Tholians.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, I'd love
to see some Tholians.
I don't know. Another thought I had about this episode, if we're going back to that.
We
get carried away, sorry.
So it seems like in this episode and in the previous episode, they found the signal and then they went to it and there were people in danger. Like, you know, the spaceship that Tig Notaro was taking care of the sick people on, that was about to just like... Right. You know, get crushed into nothingness, and then the people on the planet in New Eden were going to die because of the radioactive stuff falling from the rings. So, like, I'm wondering if that's going to happen in, like, the next episode, too. If that's, like, maybe the angel is, like, kind of an angel of mercy, kind of, like, leading them to people that need their help.
There's definitely some kind of, like, they're using the Discovery as an instrument to do something to help people. So I'm not sure exactly if we'll see that again and again, but it feels damn good.
Yeah. I had the thought, I'm curious, I didn't mean to interrupt you on your thoughts, but it relates. I'm curious if each episode will be them chasing another red anomaly and solving that problem. You know, like
it'll probably a good
very story arc.
Yeah.
I mean, that way they can keep it kind of episodic, but then they can also keep the ongoing story going, because they're keeping the ongoing story, but they're also making it feel more episodic, because this is the most TOS-y feeling episode we've gotten in all of Discovery, or just classic Star Trek in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think a lot of it has to go back to, like, the comedy that they brought back for this season. I like the little bits of comedy.
I do, too. Like, it feels more like classic Star Trek to me with more comedy in it,
mm-hmm.
which, yeah. I mean, I enjoyed the first season of Discovery, but it did not have a lot of funny stuff. There was a lot of dark stuff going on in there.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't think I laughed until the episode with Harry Mudd, and I was irritated at the entire episode because it was Harry Mudd.
Harry Mudd's great.
I know you think so.
I know so.
What else, Natalie?
Polly, I'm going to agree with you.
For shame.
Another thing I noticed that I thought was kind of calling back to Star Trek First Contact is I believe it's Michael Burnham who's saying, like, they appear to be from, that was like the time of World War III, 600 million people dead. And it sounded like really close to word for word what Riker said in Star Trek First Contact, when, like, they first got back to the past. So I thought that was, like, a fun little callback, especially since Jonathan Frakes directed both.
Right?
Yeah.
I thought it's funny that Jonathan Frakes is directing this episode, but Riker was the one who said Prime Directive doesn't apply when it comes to other humans.
Hmm. Obviously, Pike doesn't think so.
Oh, it's just, but it should. Like I was saying earlier, the whole Saru thing. Like, Saru, like, he's there, but they're not going to rescue a bunch of humans. Like, it's just, especially the scientist guy who knows, it's just like, come on, at least rescue him. Rescue one of their people. Like, it just, I mean, I like that they kind of leaned on the Prime Directive, and they kind of, you know, bucked the trend of the TOS era people, like neglecting it completely. But,
mm-hmm. It was kind of like, that part kind of really reminded me of the episode First Contact in TNG. Isn't that what it is? The one where Riker is, like, undercover on an alien planet.
Oh, yeah, that's a great episode.
Yeah, and then there's the one woman that they beam up to the ship, yes. And she decides to, like, stay with them.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But the president or whoever the leader of the planet, it was like, we're just not ready for this.
Yeah,
definitely.
That's a great episode.
It's a good episode.
I mean, that was a little different, obviously.
Of course.
I mean, right. They're not human. So,
yeah, but like, but, if they're humans, the Prime Directive shouldn't apply. They should be able to save the humans and bring them back if they want to come back.
It must be like a, you know, captain's discretion or something, like how it's interpreted.
So Pike's dick. That's great.
No, I think, you know, but you know, there have been 200 years that they've been away from Earth, and they've kind of had to move their own civilization in their own direction. So it's kind of like, do you let them kind of play it out?
They could also get assimilated by the Borg if they're too deep in the Beta Quadrant.
Boy, you just can't wait to some, like, race come and wipe them out.
Well, it's either going to be the Herogians or the Borg.
Right. Whatever. Could be the Romulans, too.
Well, I guess it depends on how deep they are into the Beta Quadrant, but they can get to and from Romulus pretty quick. So I imagine it's like on the farthest fringe of, since it said they wouldn't be able to get there until his unborn children had children. And Romulan Empire doesn't take that long to get to and from.
Yeah, no, it's like, maybe it's just like way, way in the back, just like away from everything. We don't know.
We don't know. We don't really say.
Hard to say.
Exactly. Anything else, Natalie?
Well, this doesn't really relate to the episode, but I was watching the movie He's Just Not That Into You, and I realized that Hugh Culver, Wilson Cruz was in that movie.
Really?
Yeah. He plays one of Drew Barrymore's gay friends.
Oh, really?
So, there you go.
So he's typecast.
Maybe I'll actually watch that movie now.
He's typecast as a gay guy.
It's, well, he is gay.
Yeah, I know, but still, like, it's just kind of funny.
Yeah. Oh, anyways, it's really not that great of a movie, but you know, he's in there.
He's also in the first season of 13 Reasons Why.
Is he?
If you're into suicide.
I haven't watched that.
He's only in the second to last and last episode, I think. He's like a lawyer. He only shows up very shortly in that show. So it's not really worth watching if you don't like the subject matter. I mean, it's okay, but I mean, like, I don't know if I can recommend it. But he's in it. Wilson Cruz is in the episode.
I mean, for people who haven't dealt with suicide in their lives, like, it's probably a good idea. But I've known a lot of people who are no longer here. I don't need to watch that.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it's great. I hear great things about the show, and I hear it's got a good message, and that it's going to help people. So that's good.
I haven't watched it. I have no way to weigh in.
Yeah.
Me either.
Who wants to go next?
Go, Holly.
Well, I went next last time, but I can go next now.
Let's do it.
You go next.
Ladies first.
So I thought it was cool that, you know, episode one started with Michael's narrative, and this one was Spock's. It wasn't really a narration by Spock, but it was his log entry that kind of opened the episode. So I liked that, and I'm curious if that's going to continue on or not. I don't know. I still think Michael will become displaced throughout time and space, becoming the Red Angel. But when we were talking, somebody else was talking. And I'm wondering now if maybe Tilly could become the Red Angel because
she's got
of her
red hair.
Well, her new connection, her new exposed connection.
Her little pixie friend.
This other side, yeah. So now I'm curious if maybe it could be Tilly, or I don't know. I still think Michael's gonna be a big part of the Red Angel, but I don't know.
Maybe it could be Stamets.
Maybe. It does seem like a very feminine form, but maybe.
Does seem to have womanly hips, but
hips. Yeah.
I noticed the hips. The way they move and go back and forth.
Swing them hips. That's had some fun.
For the brief moment I saw it, I was mesmerized.
Mesmerized.
Want to pick a ride on your disco stick.
What else? I wanted some kind of conversation between Pike and can't remember the guy's name on the planet at the end of the episode.
Oh, Jacob?
Jacob, yes. When he gives him the battery, I wanted some kind of look, you're a keeper of knowledge, and I respect that, but maybe don't tell them you got this from me. That would have been good. You know what I mean? Like, I
never gave this to you.
Right. At least even that would have, like, it would have been, I don't know. It just seemed like, well, you just created some trouble without saying that.
But they're also like, I want to see you again. I'm sure you will. I'm like, what?
Right.
Maybe they will come back and save them.
I mean, with that, maybe they'll grow to have technology that can take them out to the stars, and then they can intervene. Who knows? I don't know. I'm not the expert.
Well, they're going from no electricity to space travel is not going to happen super quick.
Well, they had electricity. They just haven't had it in a while.
Oh, that's because they were losing batteries.
Right.
And then they had to, you had to go mining for different ores to refine metals to actually build your spaceships.
I think they said the populations are really low. I think they only said there was hundreds of thousands. I don't think there was that
many people. Was it like 10,000 or something?
It was just
like 11 or something.
11,000, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're going to have some calluses on their hands.
Yeah.
They already do. Of course
they already do. Touché. Right. The only other thing I thought earlier, David, you mentioned the distress signal, and it looked very similar to me. I could be wrong, of the same signal that Saru had on his planet in the shorts. But I'm dying to know what Aaron's 90s clue is. I wrote that down because I'm curious what your whole 90s throwback thing was that you said you had to tell us.
90s throwback?
Yes. we were talking about the 90s, and David said the 90s sucked, and you were like, well, there's a throwback, and I'll talk about it later.
Oh, I was just talking about the World War III thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but yeah, so this would happen at the very end of the World War III thing. Yeah. So, maybe this was happening at the very end when everything got really bad. I don't know.
Well, it did really because it's the last year. It was 53 when they got taken out, and the war ended in 53. But the eugenics wars happened in the 90s, according to Star Trek lore. So that's why I was saying that Rage Against the Machine. I mean, or no, not Rage Against the Machine.
Rage Against the Machine.
Sabotage, Beastie Boys. That's why I said Sabotage, Beastie Boys shouldn't exist, because the 90s wouldn't have been the same.
That's true. That's very true.
So that's why I was saying that if it's an older piece of music like Quentin Tarantino's known to use, they would be fine because it should exist. But the Beastie Boys wouldn't have probably written that song in Star Trek's 90s because the world was completely different.
Yep, that's a good point.
But then also in the J.J. Abrams universe, that's kind of a different reality. So maybe the eugenics wars happened at a different time in that universe. And the Beastie Boys were able to write and record Sabotage.
they had that song just stringing them. They couldn't wait to put that track
on an album.
I feel like I read somewhere that Beastie Boys referenced Star Trek, so it couldn't have happened.
They do.
Maybe that's a fun little nugget of knowledge that the writers of the show have been putting in there since they heard that.
The Beastie Boys are big fans of Star Trek. There's even a music video where they're dressed in original series uniforms and fighting each other with the giant Q-tip things from Amok Time.
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's the music video for To Check It Out.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I don't know if I've ever seen that video. I'm going to guess no.
You should give it a watch.
I'm going to. I'm writing it down right now.
and there are a lot of songs, too, that they have, their lyrics just have Star Trek references. Not a ton. I'm not but they definitely dropped in there.
Well, that's why I just think it's ironic that they're in Star Trek at all, because they can't be, because they reference Star Trek as something in the past.
Well, like she said, it's meta.
Yeah, that's true, but it still doesn't make any sense. It's fun, though.
You don't make
it's
any fun, sense. Though.
Yeah,
you're welcome. You're welcome, Holly. I don't make any sense. That's why this podcast exists, because I make no sense. I got to get my nonsensical ramblings out into the universe.
Yeah, anything else, Holly?
No, I mean, that's all I wrote down. I'm sure there's more thoughts, but I don't remember. I enjoyed the episode. I did have to start it 3 times. Well, the first time my mother started messaging me and I wasn't able to concentrate, and I was like, I'd like to talk to my mom, so I'm just not going to watch this right now. The second time was either this morning or yesterday morning, and I had to go to work, and it was just like, I don't have time for this. And I totally could have watched it at work yesterday, but I kind of piggyback off of someone's CBS All Access, and I didn't want to have to try and access it on my phone as well as with my PlayStation. So I was like, I won't bug them.
You're welcome, Holly.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you. I was trying to keep you anonymous here, in case CBS is listening.
Oh, wait, no. I don't know what I'm talking about. Like I said, I don't make any sense. I say the things that just are totally random, CBS. Pay no attention to the man behind the podcast.
Right.
Unless you would give me money.
But no, I really enjoyed the episode. I wasn't sure. I was really looking forward to seeing Pike's office with an actual table in it. But when they showed them talking on with the screen and everything, it kind of looked like they were in the cafeteria, because it wasn't just the long table, it was other tables. So did I miss that?
He had sofas.
Okay, because the scene it's remembering.
I don't think it's a redress of the mess hall, because the mess hall is kind of a straight, and this one's kind of curved. I think it's supposed to be in the dome where the bridge is, but it's to the other side of the bridge. And
I
didn't notice it till the second time I watched it, but it's very reminiscent of the TOS meeting room, except for the but just modernized, because it's got the same kind of ribbed hallway. I mean, the ribbed room where, like, you see the struts going up the side of the wall and across the ceiling, kind of like a curve. It's just like the basic structure of it looks very different because it's way more detailed. So I was like, oh, it's kind of reminiscent of that, but it doesn't have the same kind of tables and chairs and everything. But I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Like
I really remember seeing like a round cafeteria table with like chairs, off like the actual shot, like in the shot, off the table, off the long wooden table. I really thought I saw that. So I'll have to watch
again. They might have used some of the same tables, but the room is curved and the windows are different than they are in the cafeteria.
Yeah, but why would the captain's room be so municipal? I don't know. It was just weird. So I was looking to see his room with a cool table where everyone could sit and talk, but it just kind of seemed cafeteria-like. So maybe
it looks like it's like a staff lounge.
Maybe that's where they were meeting while the other room was renovated. Don't know.
Who knows?
I don't know. Not me. Somebody else go.
What do you think, Aaron?
I really enjoyed the episode. I think it still goes on with the same spirit as the last episode, so I'm enjoying it. Like the pushing further into the boundaries and trying to figure out what this mystery is. So that's a lot of fun for me. I did think it was weird that, of course, we have a general one order for the Prime Directive. And like we've put out the issues that Saru can get picked up from his planet. And obviously we can tell Jacob anything now and give him a battery. You know, I don't know. It's like this isn't important. This is important. It's not that important.
Right.
You know, I mean, just it's really frustrating. It's like I get it. It's like I think the writers want to see the captain or whoever is in charge to make them look like they're good guys or something like that. But it's just if it's a rule, like they should really hold true to it. It's just really bizarre to me.
Yeah.
Or just, you know, take the rule off the books.
It sounds like he's trying to hold on to it better than Kirk ever did, but
Kirk broke. I don't know. I know Kirk was pretty, I don't know. It was a little in the middle. It wasn't as bad. He wasn't as bad. He is, but he wasn't as bad as you thought. Because sometimes the things happened that were beyond his control.
Sure, but at the same time, Kirk also has the least number of episodes to draw from. So like just exponentially, Kirk would have broken a prime directive way.
That's
true. If he had seven seasons and like 100-something episodes of Star Trek,
he'd be breaking them all the time.
Exactly. I mean, Kirk would have had the worst record, but his record isn't that bad only because he had the least number of episodes comparatively.
That's a good point. Very, very true.
He even has less than Archer, because Archer went on four seasons with Enterprise. So
and there was no Prime Directive for Archer. So
exactly. So he doesn't almost really even apply. So although Discovery is also going to be at a disadvantage with only 15 episode seasons for a number of Prime Directive violations.
True.
Because the seasons are like half the length of traditional Star Trek seasons. So even with seven seasons, it'll still be like as many episodes as original series or less.
Right. So the other thing is obviously Tilly's interaction with May. She seemed weird from the get-go. You know, like I was like, what the hell? Who is this freaking weird chick talking to him? Like really strange. Like even though it's like she's not really adding anything to the conversation, she's sort of just egging Tilly on, you know? So she doesn't.
More like motivating.
Yeah, exactly. But she's not really saying anything really insightful. She's just kind of like, oh, you have a fascinating brain.
Or yes. Something
like that. Just like really weird.
I went to massage that with my tongue.
As like, you know, like even Tilly was like, that was kind of weird.
Oh, God.
So anyways.
Sorry.
So that's weird, and obviously it's kind of has something to do with that mycelium like spore or something landing on her. I you know, who the hell knows? So like the
or the explosion with the dark matter like unlocking something.
Yeah. So there's something definitely weird going on, and so I'm very curious in knowing what more we're going to see out of the mycelium network and how that all ties in. The other thing I messaged you guys earlier on today, because I've been looking into the baryonic matter.
Mm-hmm.
So this is so it's confusing. So when I did my first thing, like last episode, I kind of talked about baryonic matter. So there's two different types of baryonic matter. The one that I was talking about last time, I was incorrect. I was referencing the wrong type. That is a baryonic matter that's a composite of subatomic particles. That is not what they're talking about here. They're talking about when they're talking about that asteroid, they're talking about baryonic matter is everything that we can see and tangibly measure in the known universe. So the issue is, in the known universe, we can only measure about 5% of what's out there, and there should be more. So what the issue from there is, what else is there, right?
Yeah, I did watch the SpaceTime video on that.
You guys having equipment issues?
Natalie said she's having a little bit of an issue.
It might be mine. My connection seems to be having some problems. I apologize.
Oh, okay. It just sounds like you're wrestling with your microphone.
Sorry.
Yeah, so we can only see about like 5% of what's out there in the universe. And and then there's the idea of between dark matter and dark energy. Very confusing, and the way they call them dark makes them seem like there's more to it or something evil about it. I don't know. It's really weird. But it's really – dark matter is everything that's kind of in between what we see in galaxies and like a halo around all galaxies. And a dark energy is kind of the idea that's pushing everything apart.
Because the universe is expanding.
Yes.
And so they say.
So
they said the dark energy is what's causing the expansion of the universe.
Yes, but there's no way that we can really tangibly measure these things. Scientists have these theories that's there. This could all change in like 10, 20 years. This could all go away. So this is just like something they can't really explain. So, anyways, the asteroid that they can't scan that has a large gravity field. It's not composed of baryonic matter, normal matter. Baryonic matter is normal matter. So that's us. That's our planet. That's stars. That's everything. So that's everything we can see. So that's – go ahead.
I was just thinking, it just seemed really fascinating. But just everything in that space-time video like that you sent us link to was like super just over my head. Just like I'm not following everything you're saying because you're saying things I don't understand.
You should add a link to this video.
Yes. We should just probably just throw it in the Facebook group. Aaron's got the link. We can just throw it in there.
There you go.
Right. Well, anyways, if this asteroid or these rocks have some kind of connection to the mycelium network. So the mycelium network, I'm assuming – must travel somehow through dark matter or into dark energy or something like that. So very confusing, not very mapped out. And obviously they're moving so far into the unknown that stuff that even science doesn't know right now.
I mean, it's a good theory. I mean, if it moves, if they use mycelium to move on the dark matter network, that would make a lot more sense, because when you look at the way dark matter is set up and when they show these images in space-time, it looks like there's a giant web throughout all the galaxies or all like – there's strings that connect all the galaxies together. So I mean, right. if there's all these strings, maybe mycelium lets them travel through dark matter, and maybe it's not really mushroom network, because the mushroom network doesn't make a whole lot of sense that exists through space, unless mushrooms are also part of the dark matter network, because it does look like a network.
It's more of a fungus rather than like an actual mushroom.
Right.
Yeah, I understand. But I'm just saying, unless like it's tied to that web that's already there, because space looks like a web when you look at it through whatever thing that shows that those webs that connect the planet, all the different galaxies. So that's pretty interesting. And if it lets you travel that would make a whole lot of sense.
And the thing is with dark matter, because it's non-baryotic in nature, maybe because it's some undiscovered subatomic particles, possibly this fungi from the mycelium network, maybe it grows within there or it interacts somehow with it. So there's a lot that could be going on right there.
It also might be a way of them trying to explain it, to get away from the lawsuit that's happening with a tardigrade game, where it's like, oh, maybe it's not really mycelium that travels along. Maybe it just travels along dark matter. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe they'll, like, change their mind because of the lawsuit or whatever. I don't know. They may not be backing down. I'm just kind of spitballing.
There's a lot of weird stuff. It seems weird, though, that they would take something that's pretty unknown and start, like, writing a whole story on just that. So, you know, there's not a lot of science. I mean, there's people obviously theorizing about these things, but they don't have it all worked out. So,
I mean, hopefully they have their consultants. It's got to develop.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but so it raises a whole bunch of questions. So if dark matter takes up most of what's in the known universe, or a good portion of it that we can't even detect, we can't see, we can't measure, what the hell is in there? Like, we don't even know.
It's fascinating. It's really interesting.
The future of Star Trek.
Yeah, right. I mean, it could be all sorts of things. So, you know, there could be, you know,
undiscovered country.
Yes, exactly. it's
to boldly go.
Yes. So it's very fascinating. Anyways, so those are some of the things I had to say. This is a great episode. The only thing I really wish is that the planet and New Eden and all stuff like that would have been explored a little bit. I think if this was the TOS episode, we'd see them down on the planet and they'd see more interaction and them wrestling with the Prime Directive and how they can tell them or not tell them things. So
the All-Mother would be a hot babe.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That Kirk would have to fall in love, or Pike would have to fall in love with. Yeah. It's great that they kind of bucked the trend, though, a little bit. And
I don't mean the hot babe thing, but it was more of the, the idea that they, yeah. it's funny I didn't even say that. Dave, what you?
Like I said earlier, and like what everyone else has been saying, this is probably the most Star Trek-y episode of Discovery we've ever gotten so far. And so far, they're doing great with season two. As far as like just making me happy, it's just been great. I mean, like Aaron and I were both kind of dubious going into season two, and so far, season two's really been above and beyond our expectations. I don't even have a whole lot to complain about that I haven't already complained about in this episode, just a little bit with the Prime Directive and the post-spore jump orgasm Pike had. I don't know. It was just kind of weird. But other than that, it was really great. I mean, I do agree, Aaron, it'd be nice to see more. They did more stuff on the planet, wrestled more with the Prime Directive. But, you know, they're still constraining themselves to 44 minutes. I mean, the last episode was like an hour and 1 minute, but they had a really long recap. So I'm not sure how much of that was the actual episode. But this time the recap was a lot shorter. So they're still 44 minutes apiece-ish. So they could just take advantage of that being online and not needing to be stuck into an hour time slot. It seems like they're not fully taking advantage of that still. I mean, granted, we're only two episodes in. Maybe some episodes would be longer, but it'd be nice to see them take advantage of that more often rather than just on the occasion to get more wrestling with the Prime Directive. Because, I mean, a lot of stuff happens in this episode, and it happens pretty quick. They do a really good job because there's a storyline on the planet, there's a storyline on the ship, and they're also like wrapping up, you know, trying to expand the storyline that was already set up in the first episode. So there's a lot of like plates spinning, and of course, with Jonathan Franks directing it, all the plates were handled amazingly well. So next episode is going to be a huge change because we're going to get the Klingons reintroduced with Laurel and Tyler. It looks like Michelle Yeoh is going to be the next episode, so we'll get some Section 31 stuff in there. So there may not be a lot happening on Discovery as far as, like, a new Red Burst, because it looks like we might be... And if there is, it'll be crazy, because it sounds like there'll be so many plot lines happening. Stuff with Tilly, stuff with Stamets, stuff with Klingons, stuff with Spock. I mean, and we see Amanda in the trailer, too. So, like, so much stuff is happening in this next episode. It'll be interesting to see how that all pans out. So it's still super excited to see what the season 2 of Discovery has in store for the remainder of the 12 episodes.
I don't think it's always just the next episode, because we still haven't seen things that were on the to come on Discoveries.
Well, usually the trailer after the first episode of most shows say, look, this is what the season's going to be like, and they show a trailer for everything. But then after the second episode, the rest of the episodes, it's just next week. So I'm pretty sure it's just next week we'll be seeing.
I look forward to it then.
Yeah. And as far as like more praise for the show, like the ship shots have been so much better. Like the opening shot of the ship flying through the clouds, you can actually see the ship. Mm-hmm. I am a little bit disappointed, like Holly was, about like the donut in space, because we only saw it move like a very little bit, so we didn't really get to see like a full donut. It'd be great to see Discovery doing donuts around the planet.
There wasn't even a good depiction of drifting.
No, it was it was very, very short and kind of, and it was all done like slow-mo. Like it seemed like the ship was moving very slowly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was a cool idea for sure, but it would have been nice if they did a little more, I don't know, maybe the graphics were a little different, how they'd showed that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, like really, like most of my complaints are so nitpicky about this. It's not, almost not even really worth picking up. I mean, I feel like a phaser exploding on Pike's chest would have, like, blown him to bits instead of just bruising his ribs.
I mean, at least they had him mentioned in the beginning of the episode to set your phasers to stun.
Right.
But, like, that was not a stun wound.
Well, it's funny because I do remember in, I think it was Undiscovered Country, that on stun they could kill somebody if they put it point blank. Like to their heads. I can't. It was something to some reference to that. But I mean, so I would say that probably if they are in stun, but it did say that somebody mentioned it was on overload. So
yeah, maybe it looked like it was about to go off in a big way.
The light was red, so it was set to kill, because the light on the phaser, like we saw in season one, like it's blue when it's on stun, it turns red when it's on kill, because you know, in the second episode, when Michael kills Takuvma, after the knife goes through Michelle Yeoh, she flips it immediately to red and shoots her right through the chest instead of stunning him and taking him captive.
Yeah.
How did that kid figure out how to turn it off and stun
it? How did the kid figure out how to overload it? That's what I want to know.
I have questions.
It seems like shooting it. Like it seems like overloading it. You have to do something special to it. Like just pressing the button to fire it. It seems like you should have actually vaporized somebody next to them instead of like set it to overload. Because that seems the more...
Maybe it's in the scripture.
Oh, maybe.
Who knows?
This is how you overload guns, little girl.
Well, some of their ancestors were soldiers. So. That's
true. Although, the helmet looked like
I like to shoot people for some reason.
I mean, like...
It just feels good to me.
It just feels good. Hoorah! But,
hoorah! Hoorah!
Although the helmet looked like
That's not.
Hua is an army thing.
Yeah.
Da is a marine thing.
Yeah, I know. But the helmet looked like a standard military helmet. It didn't look like what we saw in the opener of Next Gen, where it was like those crazy like fat suits that they almost wore, like when they showed the World War III people in the trial scene. And
all right.
Yeah.
But then there were also a bunch of different countries involved in World War III that they said. True. So it could have just been like some completely other random country guys. I don't know.
Maybe. True. That makes sense.
I mean, the Kevlar, it did look like a current, like my husband's Kevlar. It didn't look
high tech.
No, not at all.
Yeah, but really, all these things are just stupid and nitpicky. Overall, this episode was fantastic, and I'm so excited to see what's going to happen next week and for the rest of the season. Like, it's just like my expectations have like been met and then some. And they didn't do another silly inside the turbo lift that's like more giant than the rest of the ship. So that was good.
Feel good about that, huh?
I do feel good about that. Nice. They didn't do any extraneous CGI that didn't make sense. So good job, guys. Don't do that again.
Don't drop that ball again.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot to say. It just was like, so, super solid, super happy with Discovery. And it seems like everyone else feels that way too. I mean, that's here. I don't know about all you people listening. How you been feeling about it? But all of us so far have been super positive. Jericho liked it last week. We got Natalie liked it this week. Along with us, so it's good stuff.
Yeah, no, it's been good stuff. The only thing I have to say is, what's her name? Reno. We didn't see her.
No, Jen Reno. Who knows? So, did they just drop her off? I hope not.
I really hope
I
not.
I want to see her. I want to see more of her.
Yeah, let's hope
she
shows
same.
Up.
Yeah, it would be great to see her.
Yeah, she was awesome.
Yeah, there's just so many plates, so many things happening this season. It's just I'm worried, you know, 14 episodes isn't going to be enough. That's my biggest worry, because it sounds like they're trying to do so much, and like the red dots just keep disappearing. So they still haven't been able to investigate anything, and they're 2 episodes in. There's only 12 episodes left. Like, what's going to happen? Does anyone have any theories for anything going forward? Any new
things? I mean, they gave you all mine.
Yeah, and Allie said that it seems like the angels are kind of like putting Discovery there just to save people at the last minute or right before something bad happens.
So that kind of feeds into the fact that what Holly's saying, where, you know, maybe the Red Angels tied into a crewmate on Discovery, since Discovery is always there when something needs to happen.
Or just a benevolent presence. Oh, there's another thing I read on a Reddit forum, basically saying that the angels look like something called the Iconians, which is from Star Trek Online.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I never played any of the games, so I don't know shit. But if you want to look that up, the Iconians and the Red Angel, there could be some kind of connection.
Hmm. Well, the Iconians, I thought they were the extinct race that Picard was they had those portals that go anywhere.
I don't know that. I know which episode would that be from?
It's the Next Gen episode. They get stuck on that planet, and like there was a super powerful race that like basically ruled the galaxy before humans evolved or whatever. But they just kind of mysteriously died out, and they like portals to everywhere. I think the Romulans were there, two of them, and they beamed down to that planet. It was like in the neutral zone, and like they were waiting at this doorway. They keep flashing all these different locations, and they go through it. I thought those were the Iconians.
I don't know. I'm trying to
look real fast right now.
While you look, I just want to say, I hardly remember what I did yesterday, and the fact that you guys can pull up this information from your brains, it baffles me.
Oh, it's a Next Gen episode called Contagion.
Nice.
Yeah, so the race has died out.
Yeah,
I don't understand why the Iconians would be in Star Trek Online, since they were a long dead race in Next Gen era. Huh, interesting.
Well, anyways, it's a theory. I just send it on to your messenger, just the Reddit thread. It's an interesting read
for sure. It'd be cool. I mean, it'd be neat if the Iconians are still alive and we get to see them in Star Trek. That'd be great. Another Next Gen tie-ins are always good to have.
Sure. So that's all I got.
Yeah. So this is a really good episode. Anyone else?
Yeah, it's pretty.
Well, thank you for joining us, Natalie. Where can everyone find you online? Are you doing any cons in the near future?
So I'm going to Emerald City Comic Con, like Jerrica in the last episode. I'm making a original series women's uniform.
Sweet.
Because I'm going to be dressing as gender bent Spock.
Nice. I love gender.
I'm really excited. I got velour fabric and everything.
So you're gonna be science.
Oh yeah, science blue.
Cool.
Yeah, and I got I got my rank braid and my little Delta badge in. So get to sew those to my costume soon.
Sweet.
Super excited. I'm on Instagram as Mina P Chan, and it's MINA_P_CHAN. I also have a Facebook page, but I haven't really used it lately.
I think you said that last time too.
I've been really bad at updating the Facebook page, but
that's
it's
like
a
website. Yeah.
All the kids are on Instagram.
Exactly. I don't know. Just like it seems like more weird people message you on Facebook than on Instagram, or at least for me.
You're welcome.
no, but
well, technically I messaged
you contacted
first.
Me through Jerrica, so
that's true.
That's more that's way less weird.
Less weird, yes.
Yeah, but I'm on Facebook as Mina P cosplay, MINA space P space cosplay, if you want to follow me on there too. Maybe I'll get around to updating it on the rig.
Cool. Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So the show, you can all our music is funded by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com and follow them on Twitter at warp11. The show you can find at Synthaholic Duo on Twitter. Personally, I'm at David_J_Duncan. Aaron's at Blackbird2004. Holly's at Lunar Thistle. You can find the show online at Synthaholics.com. You can join the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/Synthaholics. And check out the YouTube page as well. We got youtube.com/Synthaholics, where you can find the podcast and sometimes cosplay videos from the cons I visit, and sometimes other videos that I randomly get to do.
Cool. And definitely go to Apple iTunes, rate and review us there. Give us nice 5 stars, please. And also write a review if you can. That helps people see us more in the algorithms. Also, if you can, please go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/Synthaholics. Buck a month is not much to ask. If you can give more, that's great. But just help us continue, give you content. It's not cheap to run a podcast. You have to spend money. And then lastly, if you can't do those, as I always say, word of mouth is a great way to tell people about Synthaholics. Another great way you could do is start up spray painting our name on city bridges and abandoned buildings. It'd be a great way. Just people are like, what the fuck are Synthaholics?
Yeah, and so they'll have to Google us and they'll find us. That'd be great.
Or just walk around on a busy city street with a placard with Synthaholics. The end is nigh.
The end is nigh. Listen to Synthaholics.
Yes, maybe I can carry a sign at Emerald City Comic Con.
Yeah, do that.
Or get like
actually, I could probably like make a little sign and maybe take a picture or something.
Like, make a custom onesie for the kid with Synthaholics on it.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, so definitely do that if you can. That's a great way to share the show.
Absolutely. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Thank you, Aaron, Holly, and Natalie, for coming on the show tonight. It was a lot of fun getting to talk with everybody and discuss some Star Trek Discovery.
Absolutely. Always fun. On to the next one.
Yeah, yeah.
On to the next. On to the next.
On to the next one.
Can't wait till Thursday.
Same here, guys. Well, thank you again all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all.
Well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink. And we'll cry till we laugh. And we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
We did it.
Woo! All right.
Star Trek Discovery.
Nice.
My brother and his family showed up, and I just let their dog into my office. I'm glad she was quiet.
Oh, was she?
Nice.
Yeah.
I did hear a faint dog barking.
There were probably lots of noises. The dogs all barked at each other when they got here, so I turned my gain down. Hopefully it doesn't affect anything. But, yeah. I'm going to go eat, because I haven't eaten yet, and it's 8:40 here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's 8:40 here.